Session number 4748, reel number 3.
Mr. Payne, reel 3.
I did mention that the Japanese were not signatories under the Geneva Convention. Of course, that did affect us in many ways. Of course, the poison of Red Cross parcels and correspondence. And there was no real regular exchange of news from home and news getting to home. In my total period of 3.5 years captivity, I was able to write 5 stereotype postcards on which it was more or less told what we could put down. We didn't want to put down anything else other than what they wanted us to put on the cards, because the simple reason was we wanted something to get home to our dear ones to let them know what was really that we were alive, because I had been, as I found out afterwards, reported as missing. But that is as it was. But of an evening, at this time, I'd like just to mention that really my closest contact with civilization, and never once did I dream that I wasn't going to go come home to England and to my parents. Because I used to sit of an evening when we were allowed to, not out working or something, when we came back, and just look up at the stars and the moon. And this modern day and age, now in 1980, where we have satellites sending messages from one part of the world to the other, I used to have my personal contact with England by looking at the moon, because I knew that same moon and the stars shone over my parents at home. And that was my form of satellite message before even that was thought of. That is just a little personal anecdote I put in there, because it did mean so much to me. And all those little things we hung on to very dearly as the form of life we could keep up our morale. And earlier on I did mention about keeping the morale up and cleanliness, etc. During the monsoon period we were of course very lucky, because we had heavy rains, and it was a wonderful sight to see. We could say a wonderful sight. It was a pathetic sight to see a lot of emancipated bodies standing out in the rain, getting the cleanest water that they could possibly do, because all of the areas round about where we had to get water from were out of wells which were dug down, but the depths we could dig were all paddy fields and mucky water, etc., etc. But the deeper we got down, the more pure water. But all water had to be boiled. That led to the problem of getting wood to keep the fires going, etc., etc. And during our POW life, to keep things moving, we really became very good people for pinching and stealing. It's a thing to have to admit, but there we are. That's what kept us going. And when we went out on the working parties, we did our best to take any equipment from the Japanese that we could possibly do. And by that, we were able to sell the equipment to the Siamese, who were pleased to make purchases, because they, as I said earlier, weren't too happy about the Japanese running their country. And as long as we could get hold of as much equipment or things from the Japanese, they seemed to be very happy to buy it. And with the money which we were able to obtain in a little way, we were able to buy eggs, duck eggs. I'd never seen so many ducks in all my life, and by goodness me, I think there ought to be a memorial to the duck for the number of eggs it laid and the number of lives it kept POWs alive. We used to buy them and then give them into the hospital for the sick and the things. The duck egg in the Far East, of course, is smaller than the hen egg in this country, because the hen egg in the Far East is like a seagull's, or only bird's egg. They're very small, but it was an egg, and that was the great thing that really we owe a great debt to these eggs. I can tell you that there's a little incident out on one working party. A Japanese in charge of one of the store sheds reported that there were 24 files, they are the metal files, missing, and that one of our working parties was out in working on that thing, and those men were made to stand in front of the guard room in our camp in the hot sunshine day in and day out until one of the people had owned up that he had pinched these 24 files. I obtained permission with the camp commandant to go and speak to these men in front of the gun and tried to give them confidence that we would do everything to, if somebody would only own up and say they had. And I spent a long night without any sleep whatsoever talking to each man, and eventually one man did own up that he had stolen some files. But he was a meticulous man, and he hadn't stolen 24 files, he'd stolen 48. So I said to this chap, look, you own up and take your punishment, and I will see that you receive your reward. So the following day, when I went out onto the working party, I went to this Japanese and said, there is a man standing in front of that guard room being punished for having stolen files from your hen. You have made a mistake in your numbers. This was the best way of my pidgin Japanese and making signs on the ground with a stick to explain what I was talking about. And I proved to him, when he rechecked his stores, that he was missing 48. Whereupon he assured me that if I didn't say anything to him, he would see that everything would be all right with the next working party, and this man would get odd little favours from him, for if he didn't tell the town, that he would have got heavily beaten by his. From that day onwards, it was always a very good place to go and work with this man in the file shed. And we returned the 24 files to the Japanese. They were highly pleased to have their 24 files back, and the other 24 were sold for the benefit of the hospital.
Were there any other instances where you were able to put this type of pressure on guards?
Yes, many little ways in where there were these beatings that were going up in one thing and the other. They, for some unknown reason, if I could sense some trouble going on in one area, I used to always go to where that working party was working, just to try and keep the peace in the scene. One time I was perhaps very annoyed, and my temper was aroused by some behaviour of one particular Jap, and I stormed into the officers' quarters complaining about this. I knew one particular officer that I could go to, because he had I'd heard him speaking very good English once, and with an Oxford accent, you could term it. And so I challenged him, and he said, yes, I was educated at Oxford. And I went into this Japanese officer and complained about the behaviour of his troop, which really, quite frankly, was a stupid thing to do, because he had to punish us and me for the behaviour of storming into the officer's quarters in that way. So he said, look, you have got to have your punishment for doing what you're doing, and I am going to march you out to this Japanese, and I am going to tell him to punish you in whichever way he likes. He said, but I can assure you, if you take your punishment, you will not have any more trouble from that man. The punishment was, I had to stand to attention. I just had my loincloth on, and a pair of footwear. And he took a swipe at me with a bayonet across my arm. The great thing was I had to stand to attention and take it, because if you did show any flinching or fell to the ground, then they were not at all particular where they kicked you. So I stood up to it, and this Jap who took this swipe of the sharp edge of the bayonet at my arm was an absolute artist. I have to give him credit for it, because when the bayonet got within, well, goodness knows how near my skin, he turned it on his side, so when it hit my arm, instead of the sharp edge going through my arm, I just got a nasty bruise and a thud from the flat edge of that right, by goodness me, he put the wind up me and nearly caused me to make a quick exit to the toilet. But I took that punishment in that way. The men were standing, all made to stand to watch me take it, and were absolutely flabbergasted why my arm didn't come off. Needless to say, so was I, but I'd realised what he did, the way he turned that blade over. It was just a, well, there we are, I still have, luckily, two arms.
Were any of the POWs actually executed by the Japanese?
Some were, yes, who tried to escape and were caught. Now, you may ask why we didn't try to escape, as our colleagues did in the German prisoner of war camp. You have to bear in mind that our skin was a different colour. We were in jungle camps. We were not used to that terrain. Everybody looked just the same sort of business. The natives all looked the same. You couldn't tell whether they were friend or foe, or whether they were in the pay of the enemy. And quite honestly, the weather, the conditions are such, and the state of our bodies, we were not strong enough to endure such things. And that is really the reason why they didn't get far. And in some instances, I know, where prisoners of war had to witness their colleagues being murdered for that reason.
Were they beheaded?
Some of them were fired at, some of them were headed, and they had to dig their graves beforehand and went in.
Did you ever come across the Kempeitai?
Personally, we came across them, yes. Certainly they used to. I was never, thank God, interrogated by the Kempeitai. I did, of course. You know, they used to come into our camps and create a disturbance, but they were vicious people. Many of my colleagues were interrogated by them, and some had terrible experiences in their hands. We did, on one occasion, owing to bad behaviour and beatings, etc., etc., out on this working party, the men, the troops, and I refused to go out to work one day, and then we were... the Japanese officers came out with their swords, etc., etc., and a lot of haranguing went on in one way and the other, and I and one or two others were taken over to one side, where we were made to stand to attention during the whole day in the sun. We were surrounded by machine guns, and there were Japanese and Koreans walking around us all the time, and if we dare move, they banged us on their shins by the ankles with the butts of their rifles. But before we were taken there, one of the Japanese officers drew his sword at me, and in drawing it, and with his excitement, he dropped it on the floor, whereupon I bent down, picked it up and handed it back to him, which he didn't like at all, because he lost a lot of face on it. I thought I was being very brave, and I suppose I was being stupid, not brave, but still I got away without that trouble. But I did have to stand to attention for a very long period in the sunshine and under very unpleasant circumstances. Kempeitai came in on that occasion.
Why did they come in?
Because they came in to... Because even the Japanese themselves were frightened of the Kempeitai, and they came in as the heavy, the big boys when there was any big trouble, because their pressures were so strong that they had greater powers than the Japs and the Koreans who were guarding us.
Was there any sabotage of the work?
Oh yes, considerable amount of sabotage of the work going on, and like with the vehicles, some chaps were made to maintain vehicles, and by doing that they could do a lot of sabotage work, and in our railway sidings where the gaps in between the railway lines could be made wider so the trucks kept on coming off the lines, and various oil was damaged by the sand, as I said earlier, and some of them, when the rail line party were building the embankments there, they had to do a special area each day. When they could, they put banana trunks across the gaps and around it, and they covered them with earth. Well, that covered up holes, but banana trunks were just all liquid, and of course after a while they rotted, and then the embankment collapsed and caused derailments. There were many little ways of sabotage going on, yes.
Was there any collaboration by anybody with the Japanese?
Not to my knowledge. I'm not going to say that there wasn't. We did have one or two people who were forced to work as batmen to the Japanese officers or work in the Japanese cookhouses. Pardon. They may have given the impression that they were, as a word did go, used a form, Jap happy, but quite honestly, we made use of their services considerably by they used to steal bits of extra sugar and various things which were always from the Japanese cookhouse, which were very handy for our purposes. Some people thought that perhaps they shouldn't be working in such close work. That's just the nature of the thing, and perhaps they didn't see any harm in it, and it's just the individual. But as for real sneaking, I would say I never saw any of it.
What was meant by the phrase Jap happy?
Well, Jap happy is working for the Japs. Happy to work for the Japs.
Were you able to receive any news as to how the war was going?
Yes, some very, very brave people did run radios, and some were caught doing that's where they were indulged in treatment from the Kempeitai. Others were sort of hidden, and we had to dismantle some of these radios. It was done on a very restricted circuit of the way the news came through. Sometimes we used to get messages from the Siamese, who were able to, on their working parties, slip messages to us. And nearby, there were some Roman Catholic priests who ran a school near our camp, who were very wonderful indeed. And they helped us find some news. Our camp was fairly close to the main Bangkok Singapore railway line, and each time of the day, about the same time, I used to try and sight myself with a working party that was near this railway line, because you could never tell when messages might be thrown out or some odd money being thrown out for the thing, which helps by friendly Siamese or friendly people on the train. And I often used to have to take messages back into the camp. We were searched on going back into the camp. They were various places which were found suitable for hiding articles. I did stick out that if I was going out on this working party each day, and I got away with it, why I got away with it, I don't know, that I wouldn't suffer the indignity of being searched. If they wanted me to go out on this working party every day with 800 chaps, I rarely was searched, or I was able to, when I came my turn, to move to the other end of the column because I was seeing for the chaps up there, and on a lot of occasions I did take in messages and money into the camp.
So the POWs used to hide things, what, in the anus, did they?
In the anus, also various, in the tea, one person used to carry out a tea bucket and we used to make false bottoms in that sort of business, and when I say, and there were very different manners. They, a lot of chaps made wooden shoes, we called them clompers, they were just, actually you can now see them, with, there's a famous footwear firm in this country who make aids for bunions, etc., etc. They sell a sort of open wooden shoe nowadays in 1980 in this country. Well, that was the sort of thing that we wore on our feet as POWs. We called them clompers. And you could hollow those out sometimes and set a little bit of thing. There were amazing ways of hiding messages, etc., etc. Others were perhaps of in your loincloth or in passing them away around, or some people were lucky enough to have hats which they were made to take off for the inspection, of course, and as you took your hat off, so you had the message in your palm of your hand and things like that. Some were caught, mark you, some were caught, yes. And the other, you did ask about the radios. Well, in the latter part of our POW life, when we were moved to another camp, when we were released, the British officer in charge of the camp asked the Japanese officer, can we please have batteries for our radio? So he nearly did his nut, saying, you haven't got a radio, how did you get it here? So the British officer, commandant, said, thank you very much, it gives me a good opportunity to thank you, but you carried it in your kit. So the Japanese officer carried his radio we were using in his kit, and transferring from one camp to the other. That's why it wasn't discovered when we went through our many searches.
So this was because the POWs were carrying his kit, was it?
No, he was carrying it himself, but somebody had put it into his kit and carried it in that way. The that little things like that. Now, going back to the building of the railway, I was mentioned about the bombings, and the bombings continued. And then, as our own forces came down through Imphal and Burma and then into Imphal, and the Japanese wounded were gradually coming back, we used to see the Japanese soldiery, fighting soldiers going up, and we saw the wounded and the dead coming down. They were also very well catered for, not only from rations, but included in their rations were trainloads of nurses from countries that they'd overrun, young girls. There were no more nurses, there were brothel trains, and that seemed to be a part of their national sort of heritage too, that they couldn't do without a bit of home comfort while they were in the fighting. And we used to see these trainloads of girls go up, healthy looking girls, and when by the time they came back they were a pitiful sight. It really was an awful thing to see these trainloads of young kids absolutely in a terrible state of health. And each man, when he had, even in the early days of captivity, when any Japanese had their leave day off or anything, you saw them paraded in front of the orderly sergeant who presented them with a certain little envelope before they went out on their as well as a leave pass. They were presented with a certain little envelope to take with them. They had it's a funny mentality, these Japanese, but of course then some of them came back into our camps and with unfortunate complaints, and they couldn't go to their own medical authorities, so they came to our doctors for assistance. That was a godsend to us, because our doctors and told them what treatment and equipment and materials they needed for dealing with it, and of course they were much more than they required, and really were nothing to do with the cure that for the disease. And that's the way we were able to get other little bits of medical supplies, because these Japs were so frightened of this complaint they were saying, they did everything they could to get the medicines, and that's where a little medicine was got by into our doctors to cure our sick.
Where did the Japanese get the...
I don't know whether they got it from the Thais or bought it in the towns and Thais and got it, or perhaps stole it from their own medical supplies, or that's what happened there. It's the same with the dentist, because if they wanted any treatment, they used to go to our camp dentist, who said they needed injections and things like that. Well, all the dentists used to do, and I admire them greatly for doing it, put water in the syringe and kept the injection and all the cocaine, whatever it was, that for use for our own people with bad, very bad teeth.
You said these girls were in a bad state. In what way were they in a bad state?
Well, they'd obviously had too much intercourse. They were in a...
I mean, did they have diseases?
Well, we couldn't tell whether they had diseases, but they were there. They were looking absolutely weak and worn out, filthy and dejected. And they were just like, having seen them when they go up, up the line where the troops were, and then having seen them come back, they were, it really was quite a pathetic sight. Even in those days, although our own chaps looked terrible and thin, to see this, it was a different thing to us. It just hit us in our life. Then I was mentioning about coming down, so we're getting near the end of the war, the bombing went on, and the officers were then segregated from the other ranks, and we were taken to a separate camp in Thailand, and then we were moved on block, well, in various work parties were moved, and I went off on an advance party with the camp commandant and about 200 other officers. We were transferred by train, and we had to via Bangkok to the middle in the hills in Siam, and on our way by the train journey, we did see some of the damage that the bombing had done. One very large bridge over a river, quite a wide river, had been bombed, and we had to go across this bridge area on a sort of Johnny Weissmuller rope ladder thing, rope bridge thing, which was very hazardous. And then when we got to Bangkok, we were put in little barges and moved down the river to some very large sheds, or godowns as they were called, where we stayed for a while, and we marched to a railway line where we were taken up to a place called Prachai, and then we had a 2-day march from Prachai to a camp called, well, just an area called Nakam Nayak, where we built this camp where all the officers were going to be centred in. And it was in this camp where I finished my days of prisoner of war life.
How did that come about?
It came about we'd heard things on this radio which the Jap had carried, I mentioned to the camp, that things were getting a little bit closer. And we were, one day when we were alert that the war was over, we were confronted by the Japanese camp commandant, called our British senior officer in and mentioned that the war was over. And then we found an American came into our camp dressed up like Tom Mix, with pistols here, pistols there and that, and we all gathered around him, and his first words to me, or not to me, to us, instead of saying, "I'm pleased to tell you the war's over," or "It's jolly good, how wonderful to be with you," his opening words, I'll never forget them, "Gee, you bastard stink." That was how I was told the war was over, by an American. And this American, amazingly, had been living, he was dropped by parachute into the surroundings of our camp, and been living dressed up as a Siamese for quite a number of months around us, because they were if the fighting had gone continued and the Japanese hadn't the peace hadn't been declared, they were going to drop arms onto our prisoner of war camp, the British were, and the for us to fight our way out, because we, secret information has been got through that the Japanese were going to kill us all in this concentrated area. The officers were going to be killed, and they were home forces were going to drop arms and fighting equipment so we could fight our way out. But I don't know whether they realized how weak and feeble we were, and also that what